And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
It's 11:08 here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious and very dimpled Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
Our producer, Elif Garris, in the booth. How are you, Elif?
Good. How are you?
You know what? I'm doing great. I just came from my Uncle Peter's 83rd birthday party, my Uncle Peter Turaro, and he's also my godfather. So you don't want to mess with the godfather in the Italian family and all the godfather. I just came from his birthday party. It was fabulous. We had it at Morton's. Happy birthday, Uncle Peter. It was so much fun. And I posted a picture. Well, actually, Lisa posted it because I don't have any technical abilities.
But Elif and I are sort of wondering where our invitation was. We're feeling a little left out.
It was a great private party at Morton's in Schaumburg.
I was waiting at the door.
He's just rubbing it in.
I was going to say, I tried to get in, but security cameras, they just wouldn't let me in.
And you know what? I had a New York strip steak rare. I brought you the remainder of that, Lisa, because I know how much you like meat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're a meat lover. So happy birthday, Uncle Peter, and I had the best time. Thanks for having me there.
And thanks for having me there.
Yeah, indeed. Tonight, we're going to tune into three classic radio shows. The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe. We'll have Duffy's Tavern and Rocky Jordan, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming drama The Light Between Oceans, about a lighthouse keeper and his wife who raise a baby that they rescue from an adrift rowboat.
Yeah, and if they win,
They win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
312-981-7200. That's a number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He played Steve Jobs in 2015's Steve Jobs.
You see how this reminds you of a friendly face? It's warm and it's playful and inviting, and it needs to say hello.
This is my favorite actor. You know that, Lisa?
Of all time?
Well, right now. This is my favorite actor right now.
All right, then I did a good job.
My favorite actor used to be Robert De Niro.
Right.
It's now this guy.
Really?
Yeah. Give us a call if you know who that is. 312-981-7200. Find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We are so glad you're with us, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
You see how this reminds you of a friendly face? It's warm, and it's playful, and inviting, and it needs to say hello.
We have Paula on the line from Chicago. Hi, Paula.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy to hear from you.
That's great. I like to talk to you and listen to you all the time.
Thank you so much, Paula. We love our loyal listeners. Tell us who that voice is.
Michael Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender is correct. You are a winner. That is not only the correct answer, but Carl's current favorite actor. So, Paula, congratulations. You have won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's. We hope that you love Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Order online at loumalnati's.com. Paula, it's so nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you. I love you both.
We love you, too.
Paula.
Thank you, Paula.
Appreciate it, Paul. Enjoy the pizza. All right, Lisa, your great-grand-uncle, is that what this is, Nero Wolfe?
My great-great-great-grand-uncle, Nero. And
why does he have an E at the end of Wolf when you,
you know,
don't?
Names get changed sometimes along the way throughout
Ellis
time.
Ellis Island?
Mm-hmm. Like Ellis, Elif. They almost called it Elif Island, but it's got changed again. Elif.
It was Ellis Island, but it changed.
They got a letter confused.
Yeah, they just took it off at Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is a detective series. Sidney Greenstreet starred as Rex Stout's gargantuan gourmet. It first aired in 1943. But it was not Sidney Greenstreet back in 1943. It was Santos Ortega and then later Louis Van Ruten. And Nero Wolfe solved crimes, Lisa, with a very keen eye for detail that rivaled the great Sherlock Holmes. But Wolfe refused to leave his elegant brownstone for any business. He sent his assistant, Archie Goodwin, out to do his legwork. He was kind of a big guy. He didn't want to walk around. He didn't want to burn any calories. Wolfe and Goodwin were resurrected in 1945 on Mutual, starring Francis X. Bushman and Elliot Lewis, but it was the great Sidney Greenstreet, Casper Gutman from the Maltese Falcon. Remember him?
Yeah.
Yes or no?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Beginning in 1950 was really the best version of this, and we have one for you now. Let's go back to December 1st, 1950, for The Friendly Rabbit. Here's Sidney Greenstreet in part one of The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe.
Ladies and gentlemen, that phone bell means adventure.
Hello?
Hello?
The young man answering the phone is Archie Goodwin. Oh. The mountain of a man engaged in deep thought in the oversized armchair
is Nero Wolfe. Mr. Wolfe, we've got a case. I'm not sure whether somebody's going to kill a rabbit or a rabbit is going to kill somebody, but either way, it's going to be murder. Please, Mr. Wolfe, even orchids have to eat.
Oy.
Yes, sir, Mr. Wolfe will take the case. As a matter of fact, he's working on it right now.
Money, work, bah.
Greatest detective in the world. Only trouble is, he is.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Archie is right. Nero Wolfe is the greatest detective in the world, and the fattest, and the least energetic. Nero Wolfe, created by Rex Stout, and brought to you over this NBC network in a new series of adventures by Mr. Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight, it's the case Nero Wolfe likes to remember as the case of the friendly rabbit. He sometimes prefers his proverb scramble. It began in lots of places. Let's take a look at a few of them. In particular, the richly appointed library of a man named Veek.
Mr. Veek! What's happening?
Relax, Haynes. Your blood pressure.
I thought it was a gag, but you really are shutting the club down.
I'm shutting it down.
Why? I got the joint rolling. The suckers are pouring in.
And next week, the governor's committee.
Huh?
It's moving out of Baylor County. Our joint enterprise is in Baylor County. I think the club needs a rest. Crime committees so rarely admire gambling.
Oh, that's different.
So it is. The club needs a rest. You need a vacation. Florida, perhaps?
I don't like Florida.
Pick any place you like, just so long as you get out of reach of a subpoena.
The heat's on, huh, boss?
You've just coined a phrase that may very well catch on. Get out and stay out of the state until I send for you.
Okay, Mr. V. Sure, Mr. V.
Marshal?
Yeah?
That about covers us in Baylor, am I right?
Yeah, right.
The dear governor's dear committee will be sorely disappointed. However, I doubt it'll give up quite so soon.
I wouldn't think so.
Therefore, have the truck driver deliver another shipment of carrots to the rabbit farm, eh, Marshal?
Okay, boss.
Come in, Williams.
Good afternoon, Governor.
Good afternoon. Williams, I'm disturbed.
The crime committee, sir?
It was doing well, very well. And then...
I know, sir.
There's a leak. Someone is passing on confidential information.
Who? That's the problem. Who? Started 3 weeks ago.
A three-man committee, Wilson, McCarthy, Tolliver. One of them, Williams?
I'd stake my life, sir, no.
Then who?
You've forgotten Collier, committee secretary.
You have reason to suspect him?
No, nothing that means anything. Except...
You do suspect him.
And he's been watched, telephone calls checked, mail. I have no reason to suspect him. Except that one thing bothers me.
What's that?
He has a small farm in Greendale County. He rarely went near the place in all the time he's been up here at the Capitol. But that suddenly changed.
3 weeks ago?
Yes, sir. He's been staying at the farm for 3 weeks.
Is there anything unusual about that farm?
Nothing unusual. Except Jimmy Collier has gone in for raising rabbits.
Jimmy.
Who is it? Oh, hello, Clarence.
You've been hiding from me.
I've been out here with the rabbits.
Jimmy, what's wrong?
With what?
You.
There's nothing.
You're lying. We grew up together, remember? We live next to each other, Jimmy. We were going to be married.
Hey, wait a minute. We still are, last I heard.
You haven't heard recently enough.
What does that mean?
It means we're not getting married.
But, Clara...
You've been avoiding me, and you've been getting money, lots of money, from someplace. And in a shady way, I feel.
All right, you know. So what?
I've been concerned about your sudden devotion to these rabbits and the kind of men you've been seeing.
What do you mean?
Like the one up at the house now, waiting for you.
Oh, there's somebody waiting?
That's why I came down here after you.
I'd better get up there.
He's a crook, Jimmy.
Look, all right. I sort of got myself in a mess. I needed money, but it's over, Claire. No more.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure.
I wish I could believe you, for your own sake. But I feel I can't. Not anymore.
Archie.
Yes, Mr. Wolf.
Either stop breathing so heavily or...
Take the evening off?
Stop breathing.
Old Dr. Titmouse wouldn't approve of that.
Who in blue and assorted blazes is old Dr. Titmouse?
My family doctor.
May have escaped your puny mind, but you don't have a family. Answer the phone.
Oh, but it might be a case. It might be very important. It might mean work, Mr. Wolf.
Archie.
W-O-R-K. You've got millions in the bank. Why worry?
Confound you. Do you want me to answer the phone myself?
Now you've got me. No, Mr. Wolf, couldn't let you knock yourself out lifting a telephone receiver. Nero Wolf's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. What? Wait, Mr. Wolf is to go up to Greendale at... Oh, now look, friend. Mr. Wolf does not go anywhere, and that includes Greendale. He wouldn't stir out of the house for anybody short of the... What? I see. Yes, sir, in an hour. Goodbye. Mr. Wolf, brace yourself. You've got an appointment with a Mr. Williams at the Starlight Hotel in Greendale for 1 hour from now.
You're insane.
No, I'll admit I've been tempted.
Sure, were it not for the fact that often the native hue of resolution is sicklied o'er with a pale cast of thought.
Quoting Hamlet will get you no place.
I would fry you.
And then who would drive you to the Starlight Hotel in Greendale?
I'm not going to Greendale.
Nevertheless, in an hour, you will be there.
And who, may I inquire, Cecil?
The governor of the state.
Is that all, Mr. Williams?
That, Mr. Wolf, is all anyone knows about the situation. Except the guilty man, of course.
An admirably clear summary, Mr. Williams.
Obviously, our meeting here at the hotel was necessary. I couldn't be seen entering your house, nor would it have been advisable for you to visit the governor.
I can appreciate that. You're quite sure I need pay no attention to anyone on the committee except James Collier?
Quite sure.
Police surveillance of Collier is deemed unwise. He has certainly taken interest in rabbits, but although keeping them may perhaps be considered suspicious, it is hardly in itself of value. You have no other evidence against Collier?
I know we're clutching at straws, Mr. Wolf, but there is a leak and work is being nullified. Something must be done. Hence the governor's call for you.
Very well, sir. I shall attempt to be more than a man clutching at a straw. I said attempt. Archie, unpack. We shall stay at Greendale near Collier and his rabbits.
Mr. Wolf. Oh, naturally, I know that shutting your eyes and pushing your lips in and out indicates you're thinking feverishly, but there's nothing for you to think about.
Three.
Oh, I accept your correction. What are you thinking about?
Hotel beds. They're notoriously flimsy.
Oh, you gave up on the case so soon.
Fiddlesticks. I already know exactly what role the rabbits play in our problem. Therefore...
We're going to drive out to Collier's farm?
You are.
While you test the hotel beds, fine.
It'll be necessary for you to spend the night at Collier's place. You'll drive out there and pretend you've lost a cylinder or something.
Oh, a lost cylinder. Oh, fine.
Confound you, Archie. You can invent something plausible as a pretext, and if you are properly charming, Mr. Collier will, I hope, invite you to stay the night.
And during the night I sleep, happily breathing the fresh country air.
Trust not.
Okay, Mr. Wolf, I accept the assignment. I will learn all I can from Mr. Collier's rabbits. Incidentally, remember the play Harvey?
I do, why?
Harvey was an invisible rabbit, a figment of a man's imagination. I hope this rabbit venture is more tangible, Mr. Wolf.
It is, Mr. Goodwin. Will you desist and depart?
Okay. Oh, if anyone calls, just say I've gone out to Greendale to cross-examine a rabbit.
Archie, I think you're going to be quite surprised. Yes.
Running out of gas, and me such a big boy. Hello.
Hello.
That tree a friend of yours?
The tree?
Yeah, the one you're clutching.
Oh, I was leaning against it.
It's an idea, but not a good one. Trees are notoriously skittish. The instant you really need one, they're out sowing wild oaks or something.
You sound as if you know a lot about trees.
Oh, I do. I was brought up in one. Look, now, if you really have to lean, I can recommend...
No, thanks.
Huh? I tried. Nice moonlight we're having. My name is Goodwin, and blondes call me Archie.
I'm not blonde.
Brunettes call me Archie, too.
And what do redheads call you?
We'll just skip that, huh? And your name is...
Claire.
Claire. I approve. Now, you may not believe this, but I have just run out of gas. You think I might wangle some up at your house?
My house? You mean Jimmy's house.
All right, I mean Jimmy's house.
Well, I don't know. He might have some.
Now, why don't we go up to the house and ask him?
Well, all right.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy who?
Collier.
Uh-huh. I like to be formal when I'm borrowing gas. Would you mind waving your left hand in front of my nose?
Waving, Mike?
Yes, just try it. Don't worry, I won't bite it.
All right. I did.
And very gracefully, too. No ring in the third finger. You're not Mrs. Collier.
There isn't any Mrs. Collier.
Are you applying for the position?
Mr. Goodwin, I...
Now, remember what I confided in you about brunettes.
All right. Archie, you're a little rapid.
Maybe. But I always remember what old Dr. Titmouse said.
What did he say?
Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Old time is still a-flying.
Robert Herrick wrote that.
He did? Dr. Titmouse is a liar. How much farther is this house?
Well, it's just beyond those trees.
What?
There was something ran across the path. It brushed my legs. It frightened me so.
Must have been a rabbit.
I guess it was. Oh, I'm sorry. It was silly of me.
Don't worry about it. Also, you will have noticed how much more satisfactory I am than a tree. We're clutching at moments of stress, I mean.
Archie.
Mm-hmm. But you better let go now.
What I...
And we'll get on to the house. See, I don't need a haircut, and you're not the right type for Delilah anyway.
You mean something by that. Something nasty.
Well, that depends. What I meant is you've already signaled whoever you're supposed to signal. Nothing frightened you back there.
Why?
That scream had a lot of carrying power. Well, that's the house, huh? Looks peaceful enough.
Archie,
Who were you supposed to warn if anyone came up the path to the house?
Well, no one. Something did frighten
Honey,
me.
Honey, I've been lied to by experts, and you're not one. Oh, think I ought to knock? No, we don't think I ought to knock. Dark inside, except for a handful of moonlight filtering in through the windows. Kind of early for Collier to turn in, isn't it?
I wouldn't know.
Let's go find out. Now, relax, relax. Grandpa's making one of the chimes. Time is... 10:00. Oh, it's getting late. Come on. This would be the living room. Filled with early American furniture. The early Americans would be pleased. Nothing here. What's that door lead to?
I don't know.
Or won't tell? Smaller room. Dark as...
Whenever there's a gunshot and a scream, there's usually some music after that, Lisa.
It's usually the girl that screams, too.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. That's the first portion of The Friendly Rabbit on the New Adventures of Nero Wolfe from 1950, starring Sidney Greenstreet. We'll get back to that after these words. All right. It's 11:38 on a Saturday night here. And how else would you want to spend your Saturday night than listening to classic radio shows, right, Lisa?
Oh, as long as it's on the WGN Radio Theater.
Yeah, this is what I mean.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, this is it. I mean, this is where you want. Okay, this is called. You ready for this? This is called Take Five.
Yes, it is.
Huh? Lisa? And you didn't have that posted anywhere, right? And is this Brubeck? All right, so Dave Brubeck?
Yes.
Dave Brubeck. Wait, Take Dave. Five? Is it Dave Brubeck or no?
All I see here is Dave BR,
yeah,
so hang on.
Yeah, it's Brubeck, yeah. I think I might be saying his name wrong, but...
Probably.
It's close enough. I probably would get that right on Jeopardy. They would give me... I would have to phrase it in the form of a question, though.
Brubeck is correct, though.
Brubeck, yeah. Yeah. So here's how I would have phrased it if it was on Jeopardy. What is Take Five by Dave Brubeck? And then wait, where's my... No, I don't have a ding, ding, ding.
There's a reason you don't have a ding, ding,
Alex,
ding.
Alex, I'll take Dave Brubeck for 50.
50.
Where was I? I was saying this is the WGN Radio Theater. What else would you rather be doing on a Saturday night, right, Lisa?
Absolutely nothing.
And it's so nice to have our listeners tuning us in Saturday and Sunday. You know, oftentimes I meet people that listen to this show, like someone I met today at my uncle's party.
Did you have a party tonight, Carl?
No, I went to my Uncle Peter's party. Yeah. 83 years of age. And you know what? Here's the thing. He did not know. He sat next to me. His name was Tony. He did not know we were on Saturday nights, Lisa.
Oh.
He thought we were only on Sunday nights.
He's like,
so what are you talking about? What are you going down to WGN for? I thought you were just, hello. what was that? I don't know what that was.
Elif's having fun with the buttons.
Elif is trying to make me lose my mind. So here's the thing. He didn't know we were on Saturday, Lisa.
How do you like
did
that?
Did you know that we were on Saturday?
Elif,
did you know we were on Saturday nights?
I did
nights?
Not know.
I had to remind you, Lisa, last weekend, a few minutes before the show, that
I had to
we
be
had
here
a
Saturday
show.
Night. Yeah.
Yeah, we're on Saturday.
Otherwise, I'd be just home taking a bath, having some chocolate.
Right. So we're on Saturday and Sunday nights, folks, not just one or the other. We're on both. And it's not the same show both nights. It's a completely different. We're live here.
So wait, we're on Saturdays and Sundays?
Yes.
Get out.
And we're live. Uh-oh. Elif has lost her noodle. She's got a sound effects machine in there. This could get
That's no machine. That's
crazy.
Just Elif. That's her voice.
So make sure you tune us in both nights. We're here playing 3 hours of classic radio on Saturday, 3 hours of classic radio on Sunday night. And here's the most mind-bending thing of all. We're on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We do 6 hours on the air, yet we're on 3 days.
Right. I'm not sure.
I have to talk to Rod Serling or somebody
that
can tell me how that's even possible, that we're here only 6 hours, yet we're over a three-day period.
Yeah,
does that make any sense to you?
Mind-bending.
How is that even I cannot figure that out. If I say that to you four or five times, it might make you... just
go cuckoo.
Want to go to sleep or something.
I think we're already cuckoo around here, if you haven't noticed.
How is it possible?
And as the night goes on, we get a little more cuckoo and a little more cuckoo.
How is it possible that we're on 6 hours, yet we're on
you said
Saturday, Sunday, and Monday?
I think that's like the fourth time you just said it.
I'll say it again.
Oh, wait, what?
Huh?
We're on what?
What?
What? Saturday, Sunday, and Monday?
Who are you?
What?
Anyway, so we're listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, which is your great-grand-uncle?
Great-great-great-grand-uncle Nero.
Okay, yeah, there we go.
I come from a line of royalty,
of very strange people.
Royal strange people.
But you take the cake.
Thank you. I do like cake.
So we're tuning into The Friendly Rabbit from December 1st, 1950. Let's get back to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe.
Come in. Put the beer on. Oh, you're not the bellboy.
I'm sorry. I should have remembered to bring some beer.
Indeed, and you are?
I'm a fellow guest at this hotel, Mr. Wolfe. My name is Veek.
Veek, yes. A criminal of moderate intelligence and immoderate pretensions.
We won't quarrel, Mr. Wolfe. I've something to offer you. You and your boy Goodwin didn't drive up to Greendale for the exercise.
I dislike exercise. Shortens life.
James Collier lives nearby. The Governor's Committee on Crime is unhappy. There's been a leakage of information. It hasn't helped them in their work.
But it has helped you.
You wouldn't have left your house in New York on any ordinary job. A request from the Governor, however, Shall we stop fencing?
I don't have to fence with you.
The committee's work doesn't particularly bother me. I've already made my arrangements for retiring from active business, shall I say. However, I don't want you messing around in the meantime.
Indeed.
In your effort to discover how the committee's information leaked out, you might also discover a number of things about me that I prefer to remain undiscovered.
No one has employed me to do anything about you, sir?
Not directly, but indirectly you might have to. I want to insure myself against any such possibility. I want to make a deal with you. I'm ready to supply you with the name of the man responsible for the leak and papers proving his guilt. I have them here.
In return for which you expect...
A quick conclusion to your activities and your return to New York, leaving my name out of your reports.
I'm neither a public official nor a philanthropist. I should do nothing about you unless it becomes necessary. You may remove your hand from your pocket. You wouldn't dare shoot me. Now then, the name of the man.
James Collier.
Proof of his guilt?
These. A series of reports on the committee's meetings in Collier's handwriting.
Thank you. Good night, sir.
Good night. And I hope for your sake that we do not meet again.
Phew. Archie, answer the... Oh. Hello?
Mr. Wolf?
Yes, Archie?
I'm at the Collier place.
Since it takes only 10 minutes to get there, may I congratulate you on your speed?
I've been at the Collier place for nearly an hour.
Doing what?
Oh, meeting Claire for one thing, discussing Rosebud.
Your delay has been explained. Good night.
And for another, I was being around when someone got murdered.
Ah, you laid hands on the murderer?
No, the room was dark. By the time I got Claire untangled from me and started looking for somebody with a gun, he'd left.
I see. And the dead man, of course, is James Collier.
No, sorry.
Found it, it had to be. Who was he?
Total stranger.
Archie.
I'm not being difficult. There was no identification on him.
Strange. A description.
Early 30s, height maybe 5'10", weight around 175 pounds. Blonde hair, blue eyes, a very natty dresser. Suit custom tailored with a built-in shoulder holster. Don Juan shirts. Manicured but very dirty fingernails. And he... Uh-oh. Company.
The police?
Mm-hmm.
Very well, you tell them whatever you think proper, without mentioning the governor's committee, of course. You'll then bid them farewell and come to the hotel.
Can't I say goodbye to Claire, too?
You cannot. Confound you, Archie. Do you think I want to wait up all night?
Police were not happy about letting me go, but I threatened to tell you on them, so they gave up.
You have told me the entire story of what occurred at the Collier Farm, Archie?
Mm-hmm. All details. If you like, I wouldn't mind repeating the parts about Claire.
Phooey.
You may call it phooey, I call it love. By the way, did you know that it was Robert Herrick who wrote that...
Confound you, be quiet.
Okay, push your lips around, but you've missed something.
I have?
Mm-hmm. The burning question of the day. The night, rather.
Which is?
Where is James Collier?
Bah.
Stop spying. The cops want him on suspicion of murder. The way it shapes up, he shot our unknown pal and then headed for the nearest border.
Nonsense.
Mean he didn't shoot our unknown pal?
I mean, Collier's whereabouts are not a mystery.
You know where he is?
I know where he is.
I don't believe it. You couldn't know. You haven't been out of the hotel. You haven't had any calls.
Archie, I use my intelligence. If you had used yours instead of ogling the girl...
I still wouldn't know where Collier is. Never mind. I'm impressed. What do I do now?
You get Mr. Veek on the phone.
Huh?
He's staying here at the hotel.
Oh, old home week.
Operator.
Mr. Veek, please. Hello, Mr. Veek.
Who is this?
Mr. Wolf wants to speak with you. Just a second. Here you are, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Veek, where were you at 10 o'clock?
Why, on my way to the hotel.
You checked in at...
10:15, then came directly to your room.
One other question. You have an employee, a man in his early 30s, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and well-dressed. Am I correct?
Yes, that is Marshall.
No, that was Marshall. Good night, sir.
Having done that, whatever it meant, we now go to sleep?
Phooey, we go to the Collier Farm.
Okay, but why?
Because, Archie, the time has come to cross-examine the rabbits.
Confound
Confound you, Archie. You're not driving a truck. Be careful.
Truck drivers are careful. Also, they are courteous.
Indeed.
Furthermore, they will always stop to help a motorist in time of trouble.
Archie, are you training to become a truck driver, or have you fallen in love with a truck driver's daughter?
Her name is Susie, a hair the color of wheat fields at high noon. Never mind turning purple. I'm about to change the subject. Boss, I have a theory.
Stick to truck drivers.
As follows. Our boy Collier, who had been selling information to Veek, had a change of heart and decided to turn ethical. But Veek's man, Marshall, at Veek's orders, tried to apply pressure, so Collier shot him and headed for Canada.
And the girl's role?
Was to brighten my life. Oh, you mean about her playing sentry? Well, she's in Veek's employ, too.
Sorry.
Don't like my theory.
It's charming. It merely happens to be wrong.
Merely happens to be... Why is it wrong?
Because, Archie, of a dead man's dirty fingernails, Marshall's fingernails.
Oh. Well, you made me bring you to the rabbit hutches. We have arrived. There are the rabbits. Go ahead, cross-examine them.
Good many hutches. A large pen for the rabbits to run about in. Notice that they're all cowering at the far end of the pen, ran as we entered.
That's because they don't like us, maybe, huh?
One of them, however, seems to be friendly. The one up here, and at the corner opposite us.
Oh, yeah, there is one here. He's not friendly, Mr. Wolf.
Indeed?
He's dead. Somebody stole in his skull.
Interesting.
What's interesting about a dead rabbit?
He may be dead now, Archie, but he was friendly. Too friendly.
This is Mr. Wolf. Mr. Wolf, this is Claire. Claire, I'm Archie.
Chair, Archie.
A chair. Try this one. Be gentle with it. If you break it, all the early Americans will hate you.
It'll serve.
Steady.
Well, now then.
Mr. Wolf, I'm dreadfully tired. The police have...
Are idiots.
What?
For example, do they know that you were posted as sentry outside this house in order to warn James Collier of any intrusion?
Well, they don't. I wasn't.
Do they know that James Collier and the dead man Marshall were quarreling?
No.
Do they know that James Collier had armed himself in preparation for this meeting with the gunman?
That isn't true.
It is true.
I don't have to say anything.
You've already said more than enough with your actions, my dear.
What do you mean?
According to Archie's report, and Archie is always meticulously accurate, when you and he opened the door of the room in which the murder took place, you screamed at the shots.
Well, of course. Any girl would scream with...
Then you clung to Archie with sufficient force and for sufficient length of time to prevent him from chasing the murderer. Why?
I...
Because you had seen and recognized the murderer as the man you loved.
It was too dark to see anything.
True. Therefore, you didn't have to see the man. You thought you already knew who the killer had to be.
That's a lie.
You're shielding James Collier, aren't you?
I'll never admit any of it. Never.
May not be necessary. Archie.
Yes, Mr. Wolf?
Get hold of that policeman outside and remember what happened to one particular rabbit. Well, look around for freshly dug earth. Midnight.
What are we waiting for?
A return?
Archie's?
No, it'll take him longer.
Well, then whose?
Mr. Veek's, of course, complete with a revolver. Come in, Mr. Veek.
It couldn't have been easier. No one outside, only the two of you here. I warned you, Wolf.
Fiddlesticks. You merely tried to use me as a prop for an alibi and a rationalization for a motive.
I don't understand.
Mr. Wolf does.
Indeed, I do. Did you really think me fool enough to believe your proposal, Mr. Veek?
It was plausible.
It was nonsense. You pretended you were handing James Collier plus the proofs of his guilt over to me in an effort to keep yourself out of the picture. But your proposition was silly. No matter how much I might have wanted to help you, I would have been powerless once James Collier went before a jury. You're too intelligent not to know that.
That couldn't have given you enough to go on.
It didn't. You yourself gave me more.
I did.
When you came to my room, you told me you knew Mr. Goodwin and I had come to Greendale, checked in at the hotel.
I did.
However, when I phoned you later and asked for an account of your movements between 10 and 10:30, you replied that you had driven to the hotel, signed in, and came directly to my room. Obviously, you already knew of my presence in the hotel. How? Only one way you could have known. You had seen Archie at some time prior to the time you checked into the hotel, and the only place where Archie was...
was here, at the farm.
Yes, which told me Mr. Veek had been here at the time of Marshall's death. What was Veek doing here? Only one thing, murder.
Then he killed the gunman.
No other possibility.
But, Jimmy, I thought he did it.
James Collier couldn't have killed Marshall because at the time he was killed, James Collier was already...
dead.
Archie!
What's this? Let's play. Drop that gun first. My arm! Oh. That's nice and cooperative, so...
He'll be quiet for a while. A cop is back in the rabbit pen, Mr. Wolf, guarding Collier's grave.
Grave, Archie?
Yeah, with James Collier in it.
Oh, poor Jimmy.
Veek knew the expose was coming. He had to shut Collier up. So he had his gunman, Marshall, kill Collier and bury him in the rabbit run back of the hutches. You spotted that, boss, because of...
the dead rabbit. The others scurried away from the man who bore James Collier's body to that lonely spot. But one rabbit overcame his fear. He was too friendly.
And got killed for it. There was that and...
and the dirty fingernails of Marshall, the gunman who killed and buried James Collier. Your description indicated extreme neatness. The dirty fingernails were a wrong note.
Yeah, indicated he'd been digging. So we know now, don't we? Veek killed his own trigger man to frame a dead man for it. Collier would be thought guilty. He'd be hunted among the living. And all the while... oh, I'm sorry, Claire.
It's all right, Archie. I didn't love Jimmy... that was all washed up. Mr. Wolf, I understand everything, except why did Jimmy suddenly start staying at the farm with the rabbits?
He knew he'd be watched. He couldn't risk conveying his information by telephone or the mails. Nor could he be seen holding conversation with men who might be traced to Veek. But who would suspect a truck driver delivering carrots for the rabbits as being the go-between for Jimmy Collier and Veek?
Nero Wolf. Which is why I hope there's an adequate bed in this house for Mr. Wolf.
Well, I'm sure I'll be able to find one.
Splendid, Archie. You will have the police remove Mr. Veek, and then...
and then maybe Claire would like to go gathering rosebuds, huh? By moonlight?
I would like to.
Sure. You go up to bed now. I've seen the moonlight more times than I care to remember. However, while you and Miss Claire stroll through the moonlight, Archie...
yeah?
You might remember that rosebuds have thorns.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Larry Dobkin as Archie Goodwin, and Martha Shaw, Hal Gerard, Herb Butterfield, Howard McNear, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Impolite Corpse. Don Stanley speaking. Now it's Sam Spade, then The Magnificent Montague on NBC.
There you have it. That is The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, December 1st, 1950, with The Case of the Friendly Rabbit, starring Sidney Greenstreet as Wolfe, with Lawrence Dobkin as his man-about-town Archie, who did most of the detective work, but Sidney would tell him, you know, what to do, Lisa.
That like, sounds how a little you, like
what you.
What
you do to me. Tell me what to do all the time.
Do.
You're so bossy.
You're bossy.
All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, 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 Lisa Wolf.
Well, well,
so
well.
So nice to see you.
Are you joking or not?
No.
No?
It's always nice to see you.
I usually wait
for Lisa to get here, because I'm always here before her.
I'm always here first.
I get here first, and
I
then
always
Lisa
get here first, and
here.
I wait for Carl.
And
sometimes he forgets. I have to call him up
and I'll
ask
be
him
like,
where
hi,
he is
Lisa,
already.
How are you? She calls me like 30, 40 times during the week.
Well, I just can't stand being away from
you.
As soon as I leave,
it's
I just have to pick up the phone.
Well, we see each other Well, three
we
days.
We have events oftentimes during the week. We had one last week. We'll
we
have
did.
One this
we
week.
Spoke at your husband's Rotary.
Buffalo. Well, it's not his. He's just a member of it. He doesn't own the Rotary Club.
Yeah. We'll speak at events, and we don't charge Hillary Clinton dollars or Bill Clinton dollars.
No,
it's a lot of money.
We
charge a fraction.
We love talking about the WGN Radio Theater.
We'll work for food.
Food.
Yeah, we do.
I didn't even eat the food. That's the thing. We went to Lou Malnati's and there was no pizza.
Here's the thing, Elif. We went and spoke at
Buffalo
her
Grove
Rotary.
It's not his. It's just a Rotary in Buffalo
He's a
Grove.
Member of it. And nice people. They were great people.
They were wonderful. And they served
Very
lunch,
nice.
Which is not the only reason we came, but it's certainly a perk of the job.
My palate was already for Lou Malnati's pizza because it was at the Lou Malnati's.
Because it's home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, as we all know.
I'm thinking, this is going to be great. I'm going to have a piece of Lou Malnati's pizza.
There
we
was
get there,
no pizza.
And it was like buffalo chicken wings or
what?
Something.
Come on.
Yeah, and some kind of creamy pasta, which I did not eat.
Fettuccine Alfredo.
Yeah, I was disappointed. So.
And it was good, but it wasn't.
I feel gypped.
It wasn't pizza.
I do. Do you feel gypped?
No.
No?
No, I mean, yes.
Lou Malnati's owes us a pizza.
And
vegetables.
Lisa, let me say this, Elif. I was very surprised. Lisa was quite good at this.
Get out of here.
You were quite good.
Why were you surprised?
Why do you think?
I don't know.
No,
why?
She was really good. You were great.
You did a great job. You were okay.
I just let you do all the talking.
Acceptable.
She did all the talking, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you were, you know.
But we work for food, definitely. We'll do other speaking arrangements if they'll feed us.
No pizza at the Lou Malnati's?
I know, that was a little of a surprise.
I guess every other week or every other month. Well, they have one a month?
No, they go every week. Thursday
every other
for lunch
week they
the
have
Malnati's.
The food, and we happen to go there.
We're
on the
off day.
Yeah, on the no pizza day.
So if you invite us, make sure it's at the on day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so in this hour, we're going to tune into a very funny episode of Duffy's Tavern. Oh, I think we've played a couple of these. You're going to love it. From 1949, and then in our third hour, because we'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning, we have a mystery intrigue adventure on Rocky Jordan going to Cairo, Egypt for that. That's the locale. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming mystery Solace, about a psychic who works with the FBI in order to hunt down a serial killer. And if you guess correctly, you will win a $25 gift certificate for, of course, a pizza at Lou Malnati's.
So what, he kills like Captain Crunch and Cheerios and things?
A serial killer. Yeah, all the cereals. Life cereal, Quaker.
Wow.
You know,
all right.
All
so you win a Lou Malnati's pizza?
Yes.
312-981-7200. There's really no clue needed. You'll hear this actor here.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
312-981-7200. Tell us who that very creepy actor is. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are so glad that you are staying awake with us. And we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
We have Kathy on the line from Franklin Park. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, it's Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins is exactly right, Kathy. We are so happy to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25, and we hope that you will be lucky enough to have a pizza there. It is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and check them out online at loumalnati's.com. Thank you again for staying up with us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Kathy.
Lisa, pass me the fava beans and pour me some Chianti, would you?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Whatever you say, sir.
All righty. It's time for Duffy's Tavern. It's a comedy that came to radio in 1940. It was a flea-infested dive on 3rd Avenue and 23rd Streets in New York City. That was the location. It's where the elite meet to eat. And Ed Gardner was the manager of the tavern. His name was Archie. Duffy, the owner, was an absentee owner, never appeared on the show, although Archie would talk to him on the phone. If from time to time. Duffy's man-hungry daughter, Miss Duffy, played originally by Shirley Booth, Hazel.
Of course.
And Florence Halep, and then Sandra Gould. Those were the three actors that played Miss Duffy. She was one of the characters. Other regular characters were Eddie the waiter, Clancy the cop, and then often guest stars appeared. Now, the writers of this show were some of the best in the business. Abe Burrows, Larry Marks, Larry Gelbert, and Dick Martin of Rowan and Martin were the writers. And you'll hear why. Just fantastic writing on this. In 1949, Lisa, Ed Gardner, who was the producer and sort of owner of the series, he moved the entire show offshore to Puerto Rico. He used to have the actors take a boat over to Puerto Rico to do the show each week because it was cheaper. He saved tax, you know, with taxes
tax
of the
credits,
show. Do you believe
sure.
that? It was like the only show that did that. Very, very odd. Well, this program is from 1949, so possibly this was broadcast from Puerto Rico. On this program, the guest is Charles Coburn. He visits the tavern. Here's part one of Duffy's Tavern.
Bristol Myers, makers of Ipana toothpaste for the smile of beauty and Vitalis for well-groomed hair, bring you transcribed Duffy's Tavern with our guest tonight, Charles Coburn, and starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where do you leap, meet, eat? Archie the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. Tonight, Charles Coburn. Charles Coburn. Now, Duffy, don't hang up. All right, so 1 week it ain't a dame. Huh? You never heard of Coburn? Duffy, I'm surprised. The gentleman's histrionic talents have made him one of the foremost exponents of Thespis. Yes, he's a ham. Yeah, been in show business for years. How old is he? Well, let me put it this way. He's old enough to know what it's all about, but he ain't young enough to do nothing about it. Yeah, that's right. A lot like Jolson. Except if Coburn ever got down on one knee, he'd never get up again. Huh? How's business here? Well, we're running ahead of yesterday. Yeah, we was closed yesterday. Well, you know something, Duffy? You know what'd help business here? A doorman, you know, a good front man. Huh? Well, when a customer comes in a place, what's the first thing he thinks about? Right. About leaving. So, we got to have a front man to block the door, and this Coburn is a natural for the job. Yeah, you ought to see the front the guy puts up. His duties, well, we'd expect him to go up to the customers, you know, and inquire, for instance, how they like the food here. Duffy, who's gonna hit a guy his age? Well, look, I'm busy now. I'll call you back. But, Duffy, me and Eddie is right in the middle of some very important business. Okay. Okay, Eddie, deal out the cards.
Okay, Miss Archie. Oh, this is a wonderful game, you know? What'd you say the name of it was?
It's called Jim Rummy. It's named after that famous gambler, Diamond Jim.
Diamond Jim, huh? I thought this game was called Gin Rummy.
You're thinking of Eli Whitney. Sure, he invented the cotton gin.
Well, sure, it's a great game.
Yeah.
Very educational.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. How much do you owe me so far?
See, now, you gin me 4 times, 3,000 points. Times it by 7 is 21,000. 21,000 plus 10,000 for boxes is 32,000. Multiplied by 4. It's an even dollar.
Okay, give me the buck.
Okay, here's the buck. Now, lend me the loan of the buck back.
Nothing doing. That's bad luck. I ain't gonna lend you no money.
You won't lend me a lousy buck? That's a fine attitude. Suppose other people felt that way. Suppose Isabella hadn't lent Columbus some money. Do you realize the world would still be flat? Eddie, I'm surprised at you.
Archie, this Charles Coburn who's coming down here tonight.
What about him?
Well, why don't you ever have anyone like Robert Taylor or a Tyrone Power to meet me?
Tyrone Power? Look, Miss Duffy, when a guy's got a filet mignon at home, he don't go out to eat hash. I might further mention that to get guys like Tyrone Power down here, we'd have to induce them with a little sex appeal.
Sex appeal? What is it? Nothing but sheer plain animal attraction.
Animal attraction, huh? Look, have you ever been to the burlesque?
Yeah.
Ever see crowds like that at the zoo?
Incidentally, how old is Mr. Coburn?
What's it to you?
Well, in case he happens to find me irresistible.
Look, Miss Duffy, the guy may have gray hair, but his opticals are still good. Now, beat it, will you? I wish to be alone.
All right.
My wish has been granted. What's the matter with you, Finnegan? You look a little tired.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't sleep a wink last night.
Couldn't sleep, huh? Did you try counting sheep?
Yep. Counted up to 864.
Yeah, and still couldn't get to sleep?
No, the room got so stuffy, I had to get up and open the window.
How come?
I made a mistake. Instead of sheep, I was counting goats. Another thing that kept me awake was a loud party going on upstairs.
Well, why didn't you go upstairs and tell them to shut up?
Well, as it turned out, I didn't have to. You see, the ceiling in my apartment ain't too strong.
So?
So the next thing I know, I'm dancing with a tall blonde.
You mean the party dropped in on you and carried on in your apartment?
Well, not exactly.
What do you mean, not exactly?
Well, as you know, the floor in my apartment ain't too strong, neither.
So you dropped in on the people downstairs?
Sure.
How long did this party last?
Clear through to the basement. You know them penthouse parties, Josh. They go on for a long time. So, as I say, I didn't get a wink of sleep.
Well, what'd you do all night?
Played solitaire with me brother.
Solitaire with your brother? Two of you's playing solitaire?
What else could we play? We only had one deck of cards.
Oh, so you played cards,
yeah.
I didn't know you was a card player.
Oh, I'm very good at it, Art.
Maybe we can get up a little game.
Okay.
All right, we'll play dealer's choice. What game do you like?
Flipping them into a hat. Boy, that's a wonderful card game.
It's better card game than it is a joke. Flipping them into a hat. I thought that was very funny. Flipping them into a hat.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
How would you like to play a little rummy?
Little rummy? Why not? I'll play anybody.
Finnegan, I mean Jim Rummy.
Jim Rummy.
The new card game.
How do you play it?
I'll show you. You got any money?
Well, I got half a buck.
In that case, I think I can teach you the game.
Well, thanks, Art. And I think you'll find that I learn very fast.
Well, if you learn very fast, how come you don't know nothing?
Oh, easy come, easy go.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, Finnegan. Now, put up the 50 cents.
Okay.
All right, now, card for you, card for me. Card for you, card for me.
Miss Archie, how can you do it?
It'll be a lesson to him, Eddie. It'll teach him not to gamble.
Hello, Arch.
Oh, hello, Joe. Did you finish your broadcast already?
Yeah, and boy, if I have to work with that comedian one more week, I'll blow my top.
Why, what's the matter?
He got so many laughs tonight, I had to cut the commercial.
This is bad.
Well, certainly it's bad. It was awful. Because I never got a chance to say that Ipana toothpaste is the toothpaste more dentists use themselves, as well as recommend to their patients, than any other. You ought to try the Ipana way yourself. It's easy. First, between regular visits to your dentist, brush all tooth surfaces with Ipana toothpaste at least twice a day. Then massage gums the way your dentist advises to stimulate gum circulation. That's all. But see the difference Ipana toothpaste can make to your teeth, to your smile. Notice Ipana's wonderful flavor, too, how it leaves your mouth fresher, your breath cleaner. You'll really like Ipana and what it can do for you. So get a tube first chance you get. Remember, a good dentifrice like a good dentist is never a luxury. Make the Ipana way your way to healthier gums, brighter teeth, a more sparkling smile. The Ipana smile. The smile of beauty.
Hmm. Well, Finnegan, that's that.
Okay, Arch. You owe me $3.
$3. Okay. Yeah. Hey, huh?
Oh, thanks, Arch. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
That guy that just came in. I think I seen him in the movies. Ain't that Faye Bainter?
Finnegan, that's Charles Coburn. Oh. Well, Mr. Coburn, may I tell you that many great stars have passed through these portholes. But you are the portliest of them all. And furthermore, may I say that we are indeed pleased...
Oh, shut up. So this is Duffy's tavern, hmm?
Mm-hmm.
Where's Duffy?
He's home.
He's smart.
You don't like the place?
Well, it's sort of broken down and decrepit. But then, who am I to talk?
At least you got a roof over your head. By the way, are you keeping busy these days?
Oh, yes. My days are quite full. Pictures, radio, personal appearances, looking for work.
Tell me, how long have you been an actor?
About 50 years.
50 years, almost a decade. Look, as long as you brought it up, just how old a man are you?
Approaching 65.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, at an age like that, what do you do for amusement?
Oh, I collect antique furniture.
Antique furniture? Did you buy these antiques when they was new?
All except the 18th century stuff. John Quincy Adam outbid me.
I'm sorry I ain't got no antiques to amuse you, but how about a drink?
Thank you, I will.
Okay, Eddie, 3 fingers of warm milk. Would you like something to eat with it, Mr. Coburn?
No, thanks. I have to be very careful what I eat.
Yeah, what's the matter? Stomach kicking up?
It used to, but it hasn't got the strength anymore. All it does now is to squirm a little.
Milk, Mr. Coburn.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I'll have to take these pills first.
Pills, eh? I see. Hey, what's them red ones for?
My liver.
And the green ones?
Kidneys.
How about the brown ones?
Stomach.
Oh, tell me, what's the purple ones for?
Just a dash of lavender to round out the color scheme.
Let's take a break on Duffy's Tavern from 1949. Special guest Charles Coburn. This is lovely. All right. A Summer's Place? Something like A Summer's Place or something like that?
You are correct.
Oh, my gosh. That's scary. That's very scary that I would know that. I don't know. That's somewhere.
Who's it by?
Who's it by?
Yeah.
Mozart.
Ding, 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 ding.
Beethoven. Bach.
Was this, Wolfgang. What movie was this
from? Is that
from?
Bert Kempfert and his orchestra?
I don't know which movie it's in.
It's in a movie.
It's from a movie called A Summer Place. It's a theme song.
Yeah.
Who sings it or who plays
Percy
it?
Percy Faith.
Oh, there you go.
Perthy.
Hey, watch.
It's a weird name, Perthy.
Percy.
It's hard to say. Perthy?
Percy.
Percy. Oh, okay. I was on. So very
I thought you were, you know why I he thought couldn't you say were teasing.
It right. You know what?
Why he couldn't say it right is why? His tongue got in front of his eye teeth and he couldn't see what he was saying.
This is right. You know, Percy is a name you don't hear anymore either. It's like Harlow, right?
Yeah.
Harlow. You don't hear.
Like, I like the name Harlow.
People don't name their kid Harlow anymore or
I said
Percy.
You shorten it. You just say H-A-R-L-O, Harlow.
I mean, we probably
it's
have
cute.
Some listeners with the name Percy, but you don't. There's not a lot of people naming their kids Percy anymore.
Wasn't the Percy Bryce the person who wrote Frankenstein, I think?
No, or? The person who wrote Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. Was Mary Shelley.
Okay, there was a Percy Bryce something or other who wrote a horror story, like a famous one.
Really?
Yeah. I'll look it up. Maybe it was a poet. Maybe I'm getting my
Maybe it's
Percy's
a poet
mixed up.
And you didn't know it.
But I'm fine. I'll be up here if you need me.
There's a movie called Percy.
There is?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you listening to the Stuffy's Tavern? Roger?
I'm loving it. I'm laughing up here. Are you kidding?
We hear
this
you
is
all
great
the way
stuff.
Seven floors
I love
down.
Duffy's Tavern.
We're listening to you laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Duffy's Tavern was one of the funniest shows on the radio. And here's a little trivia for you, Roger.
Okay.
Abe Burrows was one of the main writers on this. Abe Burrows was a terrific writer. And his son is James Burrows.
Mm-hmm.
And James Burrows created Cheers.
That's right.
And his dad was the head writer on Duffy's Tavern. They were both set in a tavern.
No coincidence.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was totally different, but very similar.
But not totally.
Totally different,
totally,
but
similar. Totally, but not totally.
Yeah. So, and you know, hey, it's sort of an homage to what his dad did, and he was very close with his father.
There are quite a few radio shows that have basis in... TV shows, I mean, that have basis in radio shows.
Very true, Lisa. Yeah, very, very true. We're enjoying Duffy's Tavern from May 4th, 1949. Special guest, Charles Coburn. Let's get back to it now.
Say, Archie.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble. I suppose you want an introduction?
To him? I'm afraid he doesn't appeal to a person of my sex.
Archie.
Yeah?
What sex is that?
She's a girl.
You could have fooled me.
Well, we might as well get it over with. Miss Duffy, this is Charles Coburn.
How do you do?
No. No, I'm sorry, Mr. Coburn. But May can never wed December.
Miss Duffy, December had no intention of asking you.
Miss Duffy, can't you see that he ain't interested in you?
Oh, no. Did you see the look in his eyes?
Forgive me, dear lady. I was carried away by your lovely, ravishing face. I can go along with a gag.
tell me something, Mr. Coburn.
Yes?
Do girls go out with you?
Oh, once in a while.
How do they explain you to their folks?
They usually say, Mama, see what I'll have to marry if you don't let me go out with Joe?
Well, Mr. Coburn, don't feel too bad. Remember, any girl who'd go out with you isn't worth having anyway.
Miss Duffy, will you please desist your presence? Me and the gentleman here has some business to discuss. Tell me, Mr. Coburn, how long did you say you've been an actor?
50 years.
50 years, huh? Don't you think you ought to settle down to a steady job?
A steady job? Yeah. Where?
Here in Duffy's Tavern.
I'd rather marry Miss Duffy.
The hard way, huh? Look, it happens that we have a very important job open.
What kind of a job?
We need a front man.
a front man.
Yeah, and you're just the type, you know. Prosperous looking, well fed, well dressed, businesslike, perfect phony. Well, what do you say?
But Archie, a job like that, wouldn't it tie me down?
Not too tied down. Take me. I work here, and I wasn't too tied down to do a picture for Paramount.
Yes, I saw that picture.
Oh, really? What'd you think of it?
You should be tied down.
Mr. Coburn, for a man who is seeking employment, I should think you'd be a little more diplomatic.
I was only fooling, Archie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I really enjoyed the picture.
Did you?
Yes, especially Dorothy L'Amour in that sarong. Oh.
How old did this guy say he was? You like that sarong, huh?
Yeah, didn't you?
Personally, I never gave it a second thought. I was too busy with the first thought. But what a cast we had in that picture. Remember Bing Crosby?
No.
He was in it. Remember Betty Hutton?
Yes.
Remember Victor Moore?
No.
Remember Veronica Lake?
Yes.
Remember Alan Ladd?
No.
Remember Diana Lynn?
Yes.
Looks like December has moved up a couple of months. Yeah, it was a great cast we had. 34 stars in addition to me.
Yes, 34 stars and one eclipse.
Excuse me. Hello? Oh, hello, Duffy. No, I ain't got him out on the sidewalk yet. Huh? Well, I figure on rainy days we can let him stand inside, you know, next to the cash register. Well, Duffy, we can have him bonded. Look, Duffy, there's nothing to worry about. He's the settled type, you know, not bright enough to steal and too old to run. Incidentally, how much you think we should pay him? Duffy, he can make more money than that out of Social Security. Huh? Okay. Be with you in a second, Mr. Coburn. Eddie, Duffy says we gotta test the guy's character before we hire him.
Character, huh?
Yeah, and I agree with him, you know. I won't have nobody around here, Eddie, unless he's honest. There's two things we gotta have. Character and honesty. Now, we gotta test the guy.
How?
We'll clip him in a poker game. That's the sure way to test out a guy's character, you know, to play him poker.
But will he win?
Then he's fired. We can't have guys around here without character.
Did you fellas say you're going to play poker?
Oh, yeah. You want to sit in, Joe?
No, thanks. I'll just stand around and make suggestions.
Everybody's a kibitzer.
Well, no, Arch, not really. If you happen to have a queen, I'll just casually mention that every queen goes for a guy that has that well-groomed Vitalis look. And I might even go so far as to say that you can look like a king after a Vitalis 60-second workout. Won't cost you so much jack, either. And you like Vitalis, especially so if you're troubled with dry, unruly hair. Hair that's been dried out by sun, wind, and water. Why, no other hair preparation can give your scalp and hair better protection than Vitalis and the 60-second workout. For the Vitalis formula contains two of the same ingredients that many skin specialists prescribe for dry, flaky scalps, plus all the other extras that make your hair more handsome, more healthy-looking. So try the Vitalis 60-second workout. Let it prevent scalp and hair dryness, rout flaky dandruff, and give you the best-looking, healthiest-looking head of hair you ever had. You'll look your best tomorrow if you get a bottle of Vitalis today.
Now, look, fellas. Leave us not scare this guy off by mentioning poker right away, you know. I'll lead him up to it gradually, you know, subtle-like.
Subtle-like, huh?
Yeah. Mr. Coburn.
Yes?
Speaking of baseball, them St. Louis Browns is the best baseball team in St. Louis. Don't you think so?
No, I like the Cards.
Speaking of Cards... How would you like to indulge in a nice sociable game of, say, Jim Rummy?
Well, frankly, I don't know much about cards.
A pigeon. You say you don't know much about cards?
No. About 6 years ago, I did play a game called poker.
Poker, huh? What kind of a game is that?
Well, it's been so long ago, I've forgotten.
Me too. Why don't we play again? Maybe it'd come back to us, huh?
All right. If you'll promise to be patient with a greenhorn.
I'm even greener than you.
No, I'm much greener than you.
Nah, I'm a lot greener than you.
These are the two greenest actors I ever seen.
I'll get the cards. Fellas, we got a real sucker here. I don't know a thing about poker.
The poker! Oh, boy, poker!
Do you play poker?
No. No, I don't, but I got dumb luck.
If you got any kind of luck at all, that's the kind. Now, Finnegan, all you got to remember in poker is one thing.
Yeah.
Don't go into a pot unless you got four of a kind.
Four of a kind, eh?
That's right. Yeah. Don't go in unless you got four of a kind.
Okay, I got it.
Well, Mr. Coburn, what shall we play first? Say, one and two?
All right, 100 and 200.
Shall we compromise?
All right.
2 cents and 4 cents. All right, now, let's start the game. Now, go ahead and deal out the cards. By the way, you do know how to deal, don't you?
Well, I used to be able to. Now, let me see. Three missing.
Do.
Well, by a very fortunate coincidence, I happen to have a deck of cards right here in my pocket.
Oh, really?
In your pocket? How long did you say it was since you played?
6 years. This is an old coat. I wonder if I'll be able to remember how to play this poker.
Yeah, I wonder if I'll remember, too. How are we going to play?
Straight poker. Jacks are better, nothing wild.
I got a queer feeling that ain't such an old coat.
Well, let's look at now. See here, what have I got? I'll open it. I bet 4 cents. Wait, no, I don't.
Leave it there. That's down or dead.
Are you staying, Eddie?
No, I'm dropping out.
Me too.
Me too. You win the pot, Mr. Coburn.
Oh, do I win?
Yep, take the money.
Well, this is great fun. Beginner's luck, I guess.
Yeah, what'd you have?
A pair of bullets. I mean, two ones.
You deal next, Eddie. By the way, Finnegan, what did you drop out with?
Oh, nothing. Three kings.
You dropped out with three kings?
Well, you told me to only go in with four of a kind.
Yeah, that's right. Well, do that. Just wait till you get four of a kind.
Well, here's your cards, gentlemen.
Oh, boy! I open it!
You open it, Finnegan?
Yeah.
In that case, I think I'll drop out.
And me too.
Well, I think I'll stay.
Brave boy.
Okay, how many cards you drawing?
None. I think I'll stand pat.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'll stand pat, too.
Hey, very shrewd poker, Finnegan.
Yeah. Here's my bet.
I raise you.
I raise you.
I said it first.
Finnegan, he's got a right. like to raise you. This is a democracy. You can re-raise them.
Oh, okay. And I raise, and I re-raise, and I raise, and I re-raise you again.
I double it.
Okay, I'll drop out.
You'll drop out, why?
We ain't got enough dough.
Wait a minute, I might back you if you got what I think you got.
Don't worry, Arch, I got him.
Got him, huh? Yeah. That's good enough for me. Mr. Coburn, we raise you 2.
4.
8.
16.
32.
64.
Give me a pencil. $97. What do you got?
10, jack, queen, king, ace.
A straight? That's all? Finnegan.
Yeah.
Show your cards.
Here you are, Rod.
Let's see. 10, 4, 2, 7. Jack. Finnegan, where's the four of a kind?
There they are, four spades.
Well, gentlemen, I thank you very much. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Coburn. Hey, wait just a second. I think this ace belongs to you. It just fell out of your cup.
Oh, did it? Well, you may keep it. I've got a million of them.
Now we decided not to hire Coburn. Well, we found out his memory was a little better than his character. Well, next week, Chester Morris is coming down. We'll try him. Oh, I don't know, maybe trap shooting or something.
The same time next Wednesday, when our guest will be Chester Morris. Duffy's Tavern is brought to you by Ipana Toothpaste for the smile of beauty and Vitalis for well-groomed hair. Each Wednesday, Bristol Myers brings you Duffy's Tavern and Mr. District Attorney, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
The proceeding was transcribed. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That was sponsored by Ipana Toothpaste, which you still use. And
I don't need toothpaste.
And Visalis or Vitalis, which is for your hair, makes your hair nice and greasy.
I don't need toothpaste.
Is that what you use, Lisa?
Greasy? No, it's naturally greasy.
That's Duffy's Tavern from May 4th, 1949. Special guest Charles Coburn. And you heard them say that next week Chester Morris was going to be the guest star. Chester Morris was Boston Blackie in the movies, Lisa. He also did a lot of other things, but he was primarily known as Boston Blackie. Did about a dozen B-movies for Columbia Pictures. And hope you enjoyed Duffy's Tavern, as heard on NBC. Let's take a break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. My genial co-host, the hostess with the mostest, Lisa Wyolf. Or did I say that wrong? Is it Waya Wolf?
It's confusing, the last name. It's very difficult to pronounce.
And then Elif Garris in the booth there is our producer. She's a lot of fun to work with. We like Elif a lot, don't we?
Yeah.
We just love you,
You're
Elif.
Just saying that.
I think you're the best.
Yeah, we are.
And then the man up there in the on the seventh floor, Roger Badish.
Hugh Masekela, Grazing in the Grass.
That's right. Whatever that means.
I love that song.
Whatever that means. Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Was that song? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Say it again.
Hugh Masekela, Grazing in the Grass.
Grazing in the Grass.
Yeah.
Huh. Very good.
So we thought you just lost it, Roger.
Again?
Again. Still.
I found it for a second. Lost it again.
Well,
that, that reminds me of my days when I used to cow tip.
You tip them cows?
Tip them right over. All right, so in this hour, we're going to tune into Rocky Jordan, a good kind of mystery, intrigue, dangerous adventure type radio show. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the action comedy Skip Trace about a detective from Hong Kong who teams up with an American gambler to battle against a notorious criminal.
Oh, boy.
That's
right.
a lot.
Win a pizza, 312-981-7200, right?
I was going to like, win, and you win a pizza.
A Lou Malnati's pizza, the best pizza on the planet.
Or a $25 gift card.
All pizza, right, 312-981-7200. You'll hear this actor talking with Chris Tucker's character in Rush Hour.
You know, I ain't been on no vacation in 5 years.
We can hang in my crib. I will show you my hood.
All right, you know who that actor is? 312-981-7200. Give us a call, win a pizza. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's play that movie clip again.
You know, I ain't been on no vacation in 5 years.
We can hang in my crib. I will show you my hood.
And we're going to talk to Diane from Chicago. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing great.
Good, good. Do you know that actor?
That would be Jackie Chan.
You are right, Diane. You are a winner, and you've won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. We're craving that a little bit right about now.
I'd have a slice right now.
I'd have a slice. You want a slice too, Diane?
Oh, I'd love it.
We'll share. We're not going to share with Roger, but we'll share with you. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and check them out online at loumalnatis.com. Roger's crying. What do you think? Should we share? All right.
Oh, well, sure.
Thanks a lot, Diane, for calling in.
Thanks, Diane.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. It's time for Rocky Jordan. Now, this drama came to CBS Radio in 1948. Jordan was an American restaurateur and amateur detective and the proprietor of the Cafe Tambourine located in Cairo, the gateway to the ancient East, where adventure and intrigue unfold against the backdrop of antiquity. Each week, Jordan became involved in a mystery or an adventure, and Jack Moyles, then George Raft, played Rocky Jordan. Cast members included Jay Novello, Lawrence Dobkin, and Lou Krugman. I think you'll like this. Let's go back to a broadcast date of May 8th, 1949. It's called The Lady in Disguise. Here's part one of Rocky Jordan.
Time now for Rocky Jordan. Not far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Cafe Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, Lady in Disguise.
I'd met this Francine a couple of months before through a friend. She was pretty, like the cover page of Vogue magazine you see on the newsstands, even in Cairo. And I guess she liked American company. Anyhow, we hit it off together and did the town a few times. She especially liked to wander through the Mousqueda bazaars and argue with the excited rug peddlers. When she told me she was leaving Egypt for France, we just said goodbye, and that was that. But when my phone buzzed with a long-distance call from Marseille that afternoon, I'll admit my heart skipped a beat.
Rocky, darling!
Hello, Francine.
Can you hear me?
Oh, clear as a bell.
Save the bells for tomorrow night. I will be there to ring them with you.
You'll be in Cairo, Francine?
Yes. Now, darling, don't tell me you have a date for that night.
For you, lady, I'd break a date with Cleopatra. When do you get in?
Evening sometime. Give me a chance to fresh up and meet me at the Hotel Anton. About 8:30, eh?
Sure. How long you be here?
Darling, if we talk any longer, I will not have enough money left to pay for my plane ticket. 8:30, then?
It's a date, Francine.
Au revoir, darling.
Well, right away, I sent my best suit out to the cleaners and called the laundry to hurry up with my shirts. I was feeling so good that morning, I decided to open up the tambourine early before the help got there. I had hardly unlocked the front door before the parade started. It was headed by a familiar egg-shaped Egyptian in elevator shoes and an elongated tarbouche on his head to bring him up to his idea of a big politician. Bringing up the rear was a big Senegalese and various native war dealers. The egg shape walked up to me and kept right on coming.
Step to one side, Jordan.
Keep your fez out of my face, Kafar.
Kafar Bey to you now, Jordan.
Very important man, huh?
Certain people have learned to respect me, yes. Jordan, you and I had certain difficulties when you first came to Cairo. You were most uncooperative.
Take it someplace else, Kafar. You tried to keep me out of business, but I'm still here.
I'm well aware that you won that round, Jordan. However, many things have changed since then. I intend to impress you with that fact.
Get to the point. What brought you here?
My new official capacity as building inspector.
Hold it, Kafar. This place passed inspection 6 months ago, and you know it.
Many things change in 6 months. It is possible I will have to condemn this building.
Anything to throw your weight around, huh? Don't try it, Kafar.
Mashish!
Alwa, Kafar Bey.
See that the tables and chairs are moved from that spot. Get the men busy immediately.
At once. Arak, Yosef, Marulanda.
All right, that's all, Kafar.
You will not interfere, Jordan. I have authority.
Not without a search warrant. Show her to get out, quick.
Oh, you are learning, are you not? Continue, Mashish.
Your command, Kafar Bey.
Now, remove that section of the floor.
What do you think you'll find there?
Termites, perhaps.
He's getting you in trouble, Mashish.
Am I making myself clear, Jordan?
Yeah, I get the idea, but what'll the police think about this?
Kafar Bey does the thinking.
Yeah, sharp boy.
Yeah. Now, you two there, behind the bar, remove those bottles.
They come under building inspection?
In your case, Jordan, yes.
That's expensive liquor, Kafar. You're running up a big bill.
Nectar of infidels, like you. You respect my official position now, Jordan? You understand that I am a very big man?
To me, Kafar, you haven't grown an inch. I threw you out of here once, and I'll do it again.
The touch of your hands is offensive. Mashish, remove him!
Back, Jordan, or the knife.
Brought all the equipment, didn't you?
Yeah. Now, Jordan, we will withdraw in our own way.
What about my tambourine?
It is in very bad shape.
Yeah.
Perhaps I will condemn it. Perhaps not. That all depends on you.
See you later, Kafar, when you don't have six other guys with you.
Is that a threat, Jordan?
I'll go you one better. It's a promise. Kafar followed his stomach out the door, trailed by the Senegalese and the rest of the entourage, Indian style. Just in case some of them came back and I had to wrap a few heads, I spotted for my gun under the cash register at the front of the bar. It was gone. It took me and my bartender and the waiters and the cook and the dishwasher all that day and most of the next to get the tambourine back in shape, replace the broken bottles of liquor with some more stuff from the cellar. But I wasn't going to let that trouble ruin my date with Francine. The cleaner brought my suit back in time, and Chang Li did a good job on my shirts, and I was off for the Anton Hotel. It was off the main drag a little, not very imposing. At exactly 8:30, I stepped up to the desk.
Yes, yes?
I'm calling for Francine Tournay.
One moment, please. Room 502. Miss Tournay, gentlemen will see you in the lobby. Pardon? Yes. Yes, I'll tell him. Sorry, Miss Tournay is not to be disturbed.
But I had a date with her. Call her back. Tell her it's Rocky Jordan.
Miss Tournay does not wish to be...
Give me that phone.
Mr. Jordan, you will find the house
phone... Give me room 502 and hurry it up.
This is highly irregular.
Yes? Hello?
Hello, Francine.
Who is this?
Oh, what's the idea? This is Rocky. Rocky Jordan. Hello? Hello?
Now, if you will kindly hand me that phone.
Take it, Sonny, but I still say she's seeing me. The room clerk looked worried, but I punched the elevator button, and just 43 seconds and five floors later, I was knocking at room 502. She didn't open the door very far, so I pushed it the rest of the way.
Well?
We had a date.
I did not have a date.
Oh, that's right. Mine was with Francine.
I am Francine Tournay.
Uh-uh.
Don't you think I know who I am?
Well, sure you do, so why don't you tell me? And while you're about it, who are you trying to pass yourself off as?
I am going to call the house detective.
Yeah, let's do.
Are you Rocky Jordan?
Yes. Now, where's Francine?
She is not coming. She said she would write you and explain.
She didn't write me anything. It looks like you know who I am, though. Why didn't you want to see me?
I did not want to see anyone.
Explain some more. Who are you?
I am Marna Zenda.
You got a passport, Marna?
Francine's passport. I had to use it. It was the only way...
The only way you could get into Egypt? Why?
Rocky, it is none of your affair. keep out of it. Francine will explain everything.
No, I'd rather hear it from you.
My father was an importer here in Cairo. It was a partnership. They were accused of running guns. My father knew nothing about it, but he got all the blame. He and all our family were driven out of Egypt. We lost our citizenship.
What about the partner?
He had political affiliations and was not touched. It was he who was running guns, not my father.
Look, supposing your story's true.
It is, Rocky.
Why is Francine taking all this chance? What does it mean to her?
Francine is my dearest friend. She was employed by my father's partner. She, of all people, should know that my father was innocent. She offered me her passport, her plane ticket, and hotel reservation.
Well, it might work. You look a little like her.
My mother is French, my father Egyptian. This is our home. I had to get back to Cairo and square things.
Exactly with who?
His name is Kafar.
Kafar Bey?
You know him?
A nodding acquaintance. Just how are you going to square things?
That is still my business.
Okay, let's keep it that way. Only watch your step around Kafar. He's a very big man. I didn't leave Marna any too soon. As I came out, I bumped into the room clerk. He had a house dick with him. I waved goodbye to him and went on out. Well, I figured if Marna was out after Kafar, I might as well get my licks in first. I'd made out an itemized bill for the damage Kafar and his boys had done to my tambourine the day before, so I was off to deliver it in person. It was getting late, and there was a chance I might catch him alone. Kafar had moved to a big all-white place surrounded by a 5-foot wall a little way outside of Cairo. I got there about 10 o'clock and buzzed the gate, but no answer. I finally tried it. With a rusty squeak, it opened, and I walked into the courtyard and started for the house. Near the fountain was a statue, arms outspread, looking down. It struck me the statue seemed surprised. When I saw what it was looking at, so was I. There lay Kafar, still wearing his elevator shoes and oversized fez. But Kafar wasn't a big man anymore. Part of a shoulder pad was ripped away by a .45 slug, and a couple of more had finished the job. When I turned him over, he was still warm. Just then, the gate squeaked up front, and I saw Kafar's big Senegalese coming across the court. I didn't know if he recognized me or not, and I wasn't waiting to find out.
Who is there? Stop at once!
I went over the wall and kept going. It figured Marna had gotten to Kafar first, and I didn't want any part of it. Well, I got back to the tambourine, tried for some sleep, and got nothing but bad dreams. I kept looking for Francine, with Marna showing up in her place. The next morning, when I came down to my office, I found a letter on the desk. Airmail special delivery from Marseille. Yeah, it was from Francine. Dear Rocky, I hope and trust that this letter reaches you before our date.
I won't be coming to Cairo this time. A very dear friend of mine, Marna Zandar, is using my passport and accommodations. She will also be using my name while in Cairo. This must seem very strange to you, but there is no other way for Marna to get into Cairo, and this is most important to her. Please, Rocky, do not interfere, for her sake and for mine. You can understand why I did not think it best to call and tell you this by phone.
When we see each other again, I will explain everything. Sorry, darling. Signed, Francine.
Good morning, Jordan.
Coming in the door, flanked by two of his uniformed men, was Captain Sam Sabaya, Cairo Police.
You have no greeting, Jordan?
Sure. Sit down. Have some coffee, Sam.
It is an offense to refuse proffered hospitality, but I have no choice.
Meaning what?
That I am here on very serious matter. Jordan, no doubt you were acquainted with one Kafar Bey.
The Bey is your idea. He's just Kafar to me.
Was he not here in your tambourine 2 days ago?
Yeah, he and a lot of other guys. They tore up things. Want me to show you?
In a moment. Is it true that you made certain threats toward this man?
Well, you might call them threats. I didn't like his way of showing me how big he was. Why?
Kafar is dead. Murdered.
You better get busy, Sam. Kafar had a lot of influence.
Jordan, you must know me better than that. Duty is no respecter of position.
Sorry. Where do I fit in?
That remains to be seen. You have a gun, I believe. A .45.
I did have. Went for it after Kafar and his mob left the other day, but it was gone.
Indeed. Will you show me where you kept it?
Anything to oblige? I kept it under the cash register out front here. You turn it up and you get a reward.
Jordan, has it ever occurred to you that a thorough investigation is to your advantage as well as...
Go on.
A About that reward, Jordan.
Don't tell me, Sam.
Is this your gun?
It looks like it. I tell you, it was gone.
Three empty shells. Fired very recently.
So that wraps it up. I shoot Kafar and then leave my gun here in plain sight.
Kafar was shot, Jordan. But of course you knew.
Oh, that's no trap, Sam. Need a lot more to tie me in.
A witness, perhaps? I have one. A large Sengali swears that he saw you running from Kafar's courtyard shortly after the murder. Well, I am waiting for your denial.
Okay, Sam. I went to Kafar's place with a bill for the damage he'd done to my tambourine. He was dead then. When Mashish showed up, I didn't want any trouble with him, and I got out.
Oh. Why did you not notify me of Kafar's death?
I figured Mashish would do that.
I see. There is every reason why I should handcuff you at this moment. However, I shall wait for a report from ballistics.
Give me a little rope, Sam, so I'll hang myself.
Jordan, in Cairo, the penalty for murder is not by hanging. However, it is swift and sure.
You don't want to be in Cairo and be suspected of murder, Lisa.
Or anywhere else, for
well,
that matter.
Cairo would not be a place I'd want to be suspected of murder. You know? Like Rocky Jordan is right there. So we'll get back to that in a few minutes. This is called The Lady in Disguise from May 8th, 1949 on Rocky Jordan. But first, these words. Lisa, are you up?
What?
Are you up?
Did you say something?
Wake up.
Wake up.
Lisa was snoring. Did you hear that?
I don't snore. And if I did snore, I wouldn't do it here.
You need those...
No snore strips.
What are those strips that you put on your nose?
Yeah, those nasal snores. No,
nasal
no more
strips.
Snore.
Well, Elif would know. She uses them, don't
yeah,
you, Elif?
Yeah, what are those called?
Yeah.
Because you're a snorer, aren't you?
Oh, I sound like an orchestra when
really?
I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
Have you... And how
you
would you know
like
this,
the
Carl?
Like a trombone?
And how would you know this, Carl?
Elif sleeps at her desk. There. She sleeps at her desk. Sometimes.
I sleep at the desk, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we're listening to Rocky Jordan. This is called Lady in Disguise. Let's get back to it now. Part two of Rocky Jordan.
There were a lot more things I could have told Captain Sabaya about Kafar's death. How Francine Tournay had called me from Marseille that she was flying to Cairo. Only another girl using Francine's passport name showed up in her place. After I got her real name, Marna Zendar, she told me she was in Cairo to square things with Kafar. An airmail special from Francine in Marseille then backed up Marna's story and begged me to keep out of it. All at once, I was Sabaya's A1 suspect. My gun was being checked for the bullets found in Kafar's body. Well, I didn't have to flip a piastre to decide where I was going next. It looked like Marna had squared things in a hurry, so I was off for the Hotel Anton. I was walking toward the Sharia Mekal to spot a taxi when all at once the sidewalk got crowded.
Over, Jordan.
Hey, what the... Oh, Mashish.
Alwa. It is Mashish. Sengali's bodyguard to his honor, Kafar Bey.
Looks like you're out of a job, Mashish.
It's true. But one more task remains. Over, Jordan.
You're getting in trouble again.
I was trusted with Kafar's life.
But you didn't protect him so good.
It's true. I failed. I am disgraced. Enter the alley, Jordan.
Let's stay right here.
The alley.
Okay, Mr. The Alley. Now, what's on your mind?
The death of my master.
Well, you act like I did it.
I saw you. You kill him. Now you die.
Oh, that knife again. Drop it, Mashish.
You let go my arm.
It was good with a gun. Maybe you shot Kafar.
No, you.
Let it drop. When we're alone, I can take care of guys like you.
Now I kill.
I had him by the wrist, but he was a tough boy, and the knife was getting too close. So I slammed him against the wall. His loose arm went around my neck, and I slammed again. This time the knife dropped. Mashish dived for it. I landed on top. He rolled around, picking up a lot of alley dirt. Then I had him on his feet again. He was lost without the knife, and like most natives, he didn't know how to use his fist. So I gave him the 1-2. He called things off and was running away fast. Well, he could go. I didn't want him. It took me another half hour to get back to my place and throw on some clean clothes. This time I got to the Hotel Anton without any trouble. The room clerk was still holding his own.
Yes, sir?
Rocky Jordan to see Francine Tournay.
That is impossible, Mr. Jordan.
Come on, get her on the phone and hurry.
That, too, is impossible. Miss Tournay is not here.
Where is she?
I really couldn't say. As I recall, Mr. Jordan, Miss Tournay had no desire to see you.
Oh, cut it, Sonny. She doesn't need your protection.
Mr. Jordan, Miss Tournay is not here. She checked out. She's taken her luggage with her. She's no longer registered here. Now, do I make myself clear?
Not quite. Where did she go?
Pound
note help?
It's most irregular.
Take it or leave it.
She left for the airport not more than a half hour ago.
If I had any doubts about Marna before, I was sure now. I grabbed a taxi and told the driver to speed it up for Almaza Airport. He honked his way across Solomon Pasha Square, and in 20 minutes we were there. A big plane was warming up on the nearest runway. I got inside the station, started scouting around. A lot of people were milling in and out, and I did a lot of looking. Then a sudden face in the crowd sent me running. It took a split second for me to realize it wasn't the face of Marna, but of somebody who was supposed to be in Marseille. The face of Francine Tournay. Then it was gone. I kept looking, then I began to tell myself I was wrong. Maybe I'd just been thinking too much about Francine the past couple of days.
Plane leaving for Casablanca, Rome, Marseille. Gate one, last call. Plane leaving for Casablanca.
I got over to gate one. I wasn't a second too soon.
Please let me
go. Oh, you in a hurry, Marna?
Oh, Rocky, what are you doing here?
Looking for you. We got some things to clear up.
My plane is about to leave. I haven't any time.
You got lots of time.
Let me go.
You call a guard? Go ahead. There's lots of them around. We'll talk about the passport you're using.
No, please. They're closing the gate.
Stay here, Marna.
But I've got to get on that plane.
But not now, you won't.
You know what you're doing to me.
I'm about to find that out. Over here behind the fountain. Come on, where we can talk.
Well, Mr. Jordan, you have decided to make this your affair. You have bothered me in every possible way. Now you have made me miss my plane. What more do you want?
I won't ask you how you lifted the gun for my cafe. That's not important.
What gun?
The one you used to kill Kafar and planted back on me. I don't like your way of squaring things, Marna.
Oh, I see. Rocky.
Yeah?
You've got it all wrong. I did not kill Kafar.
It's too late for that. You're trying to get out of Cairo fair sort of tripped you up.
I will admit I was frightened. When I learned of Kafar's murder, I was afraid I would be blamed. The authorities would soon find out who I really am.
Well, you wouldn't want that, would you?
Rocky, you of all people should know that I would not kill Kafar.
Tell me real slow.
I did tell you. I came to Cairo to clear my father's name. The minute I found the one man who could do that, would I kill him?
It's one I can't answer.
Now that he is dead, no one can help me, not even you. And Francine told me you would understand.
Sure, I'm to understand a murder that's pinned on me. Maybe you had other reasons. How do I know your story's true?
Rocky, at what time was Kafar killed?
It was about 10 o'clock when I found him. He hadn't been dead long.
I could not have been there. From the moment I arrived at my hotel yesterday evening, I never left there till this morning.
You expect me to believe that?
Ask whoever you like. The doorman, the bellboy, the room clerk, the waitress in the restaurant.
All right, we'll do that. Come on, Marna. And that's what we did. Marna stayed with me, and we went back to the Hotel Anton. I had a lot of conversations. First, I talked to the doorman.
I remember this lady well, sir. She arrived in the airport bus at 7:30. I was on duty until 11. She did not come out this door.
After that, we went over to the desk and had a chat with my friend, the room clerk.
Yes, I'm certain she did not leave the hotel last night. As a matter of fact, I talked to her on the phone shortly after you left her room. We have certain regulations, you know.
Well, if he was looking for another pound note, he didn't get it. Next, we looked up the waitress in the hotel restaurant.
Sure, I remember her. No tip. She came in at 9 o'clock and stayed too long. Lamb chops with no potatoes. Reducing, I guess.
Well, the bellhop told me he'd taken ice water to her room at 10 o'clock, right on the nose. I talked to a few others, but they all came up with the same answer.
Well, do you believe me now, Mr. Jordan?
A lot of people would have to be lying.
That is not likely, is it?
Maybe not. Marna, if you're smart, you'll check in here again and wait around a couple of days.
But being in Cairo is dangerous for me.
Not as dangerous as running away.
Oh, you are so thoughtful of me, Mr. Jordan. But as long as you are running things, I'll be here.
Now, that's when I went back to the tambourine. It looked like Marna had cleared herself for Kafar's murder. But after running all over Cairo, I still hadn't helped my own case a bit. The afternoon rush was on when I walked into the tambourine. When Chris, my bartender, saw me, he jerked his head to a back table and kept on drawing a beer. The place was heavy with smoke, and I couldn't make out who it was. As I went back, it dawned on me like a camera fade-in. Again, the face of Francine Tournay.
Rocky, darling!
It's really you, Francine.
But of course, mon chéri. I've been looking everywhere for you.
At the airport?
You saw me there? Why did you not say something?
I tried to, but you were gone.
Are you not glad to see me, Rocky?
Oh, sure, Francine, sure.
Did you get my letter?
It's right here in my pocket. Said you weren't coming to Cairo.
A woman can change her mind, Nespa.
Yeah, but your passport.
Well, I decided if Marna could get in on somebody else's passport, so could I. So here I am.
Oh, when'd you get here?
Today, at noon. Does it matter?
Francine, your friend Marna's in trouble.
Yes, I know. Poor Marna.
I saw her last night. She gave me a big story about coming to Cairo to square father's name with Kafar.
It is true, Rocky. Marna's father was convicted of running guns, and his whole family lost their citizenship. Kafar was his partner, and doing it all. When I found that out, I quit his employ and went to France with Marna. I only wanted to help her.
You did?
She was very bitter, but I had no idea it would come to this. I didn't dream that she... Did she kill him, Rocky?
I don't know.
Well, let's forget it for now.
Oh, it's not that easy, Francine.
I know, but we can try, can't we? Take me someplace, Rocky. I won't be long in Cairo, and I won't...
Okay, Francine. Let's get out of here.
Oh, I dropped my purse.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Oh, I am so sorry. The silly things in a woman's purse.
You're not kidding. Oh, this yours, too?
Yes, my airplane ticket stub. Thank you, Rocky. Now, shall we go?
Oh, Francine.
Yes, Rocky?
I almost forgot. There's a couple of things I've got to clear up here. Why don't you catch a taxi and go on to your place, huh? Where are you staying?
The Said House.
Well, I'll see you there, huh?
Very well, Rocky. Au revoir.
Francine didn't know what had stopped me. It was the sight of an official black car drawing to the curb in front. Sam Sabaya got out and waited, and so did I. The cat and mouse game went on for a little while, and finally he came in. Bring the handcuffs with you, Sam?
Jordan, many times you and I have had difficulties. In every case, I have been inclined to give you the benefit of the doubt.
That's right, you have.
However, in this case, I have no alternative.
There's no odd feelings.
You will come with me, Jordan.
Sure. Oh, front seat, Sam. Where's the rest of you boys?
I prefer it this way. Get in, Jordan.
Is there anything new I don't know?
The gun I found in your cafe this morning, you still say it is yours?
I won't argue.
I have a report from ballistics. It is the same gun which killed Kafar.
So you're arresting me for murder?
What would you do, Jordan?
I'm glad I don't have to answer that one. Anyhow, it looks like you're ruining my evening. That's the Saeed House up ahead, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I had a date with a pretty little French girl there. Just got in from Marseille. That's when it hit me, like lightning hits the desert. Sam, stop the car. Stop it quick.
Jordan, what are you doing?
Come with me, Sam.
Get back in the car.
It's holding you, Sam. Come on. I barrel into the lobby of the Saeed House with Sam trailing close behind. I had a quick look at the registration book on the desk, then grabbed it up and took it with me and made for the stairs. Sam kept protesting all the way, but I didn't wait to explain. In 15 seconds flat, we were knocking at a room on the second floor.
Yeah. Why, Rocky, you made it in a hurry.
Not any too soon, Francine. Come in, Sam.
Who is this?
Captain Sabaya, police.
But I don't understand.
At the moment, madame, neither do I. Well, come on, Jordan.
Let's clean it up. I'd like another look in your purse, Francine.
My purse? Rocky, darling, what is wrong?
The airplane ticket stub. You told me you flew in today, Francine.
Rocky!
When I picked that stub up off the floor back at the tambourine, the date didn't register at first. Here, look at it, Sam.
This ticket was used 2 days ago.
Sure. Now, exhibit number 2, the hotel register.
You will not find my name there.
Any name will do, just so the handwriting checks with this letter I got from you this morning. Let's see. Here we are. Mona Hargis, alias Francine Tournay, checked in 2 days ago.
You're being stupid.
Worked fine, didn't it? You made it here in plenty of time to kill Kafar.
But the letter, I mailed it yesterday from Marseille. That proves I was not here last night. Who you're trying to protect, Marna. You're in love with her, that is
One moment, Miss Tournay. Continue, Jordan.
Took a lot of planning. A phone call to make sure I ran into Marna. The letter you wrote but had somebody else mail yesterday from Marseille to prove you couldn't have been here.
You're lying.
You planned to sneak into town, kill Kafar, and get out, planning the murder on Marna. Or if not her, me.
Then why would I come to your cafe?
What else could you do? When you went to the airport, you found out Marna was taking the same plane. Then you had a hunch I saw you there, getting away in the crowd. So you decided to cover up, come to me, and said you just got in.
And why would I kill Kafar?
You once worked for him. Doing what?
I was merely his secretary.
That include juggling the books to throw the blame for the gun running on Marna's father? Maybe when it came time for the payoff, Kafar double-crossed you, too.
Miss Tournay, any further statements you have to make...
Oh, one more thing. How'd you get the gun in and out of my cafe, Francine?
Money will buy anything.
We shall see, Miss Tournay. Jordan,
apologies, Sam. Right now, I've got a few mistakes of my own to clear up. With Marna. Well, when Sabaya finally got the full story out of Francine, it checked pretty close with mine. That cleared things for Marna Zandar and her family, and they were permitted to return to Cairo. And I finally had my date. Francine was tied up, shall we say. So Marna and I did the town. That suited me. She liked Americans, too.
CBS again at this same time next week for another story of adventure and intrigue when we take you back to Cairo and the Cafe Tambourine run by Rocky Jordan. Jack Moyles plays the title role with tonight's story by Larry Roman and Gomer Kuhl. Rocky Jordan is produced and directed by Cliff Howell with original music by Richard Arant. Larry Thor speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Rocky Jordan going back to May 8th, 1949. This was only 4 days after the Duffy's Tavern episode, May 4th, 1949, Lisa.
See?
4 days later. And well, not that that matters really much. Something. Not sure why that matters at all. This is called The Lady in Disguise, and it stars Jack Moyles as Rocky Jordan. And Larry Thor did the announcing on this. Larry Thor had one of the deepest voices in radio. He had an even deeper voice than your husband, Dan.
Oh, that's pretty tough to
and,
do.
And Larry Thor was the star of Broadway Is My Beat. He was Danny Clover. Also in this cast, Jay Novello and Paul Frees. Paul Frees did a ton of cartoon voices. He was Boris Badenoff on the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And hope you enjoyed a good mystery, adventure, intrigue show on Rocky Jordan. Let's take a break. Then it's much more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Hey, you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
We're going to be back here in about 20... Let's figure this out exactly.
21 hours.
21? Mm-hmm. You sure about that?
Yeah. Well, assuming it's 2 o'clock right now, it'll be hours.
Well, we're
3 hours
here
11. Less than 24 hours.
So I guess you're right.
I guess so.
21 hours. That's pretty good math.
21:05, actually.
21 hours, Lisa and I will be back here, and we have more classic radio shows for you. In fact, that's a good lineup. We have Mr. and Mrs. North. That's a great detective series. And then My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball and Richard Denning. And in fact, Richard Denning is part of the Mr. and Mrs. North team, too. It's Richard Denning and Barbara Britton. So you'll hear Richard Denning in two shows. And then after that, Tales of the Texas Rangers with Joel McRae. So we have a detective, a comedy, and a Western detective show. That's in 21 hours right here on WGN Radio when Lisa and I and Elif... Well, Elif's not going to be here.
No, she's deserting
us
tonight.
Elif is taking a night off.
Yeah, I'm just going to do a little R&R, you know, maybe get a massage.
Really?
No.
Well, you could get one here. We'll give you a massage.
Speak for yourself.
Right? Lisa, no, I'm saying we'll bring someone in.
Right
here. If you
a
do
professional?
This show. A professional masseuse.
Yeah, I'll set up a table right in the window.
Do they say,
right in the window.
Is it masseur or masseuse?
Either way.
I guess either way, right?
Yeah.
Well, John Travolta would know, that's for sure.
Oh, no.
Anyway, Roger, in about 20.
Are we done yet? I'm sorry, what?
About 21 hours, we'll be back.
21,
here.
Really?
Yeah, 21
I
hours.
I did not know that.
We'll be back. Hey, you know what? We didn't remind our listeners that if they send in a picture of themselves and their kitty cat, they could be eligible to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Our sponsor comes in here once a month and gives away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Want to tell them all about it, Lisa?
I think you just did. Wow. So sometime during the month of September, you can send a picture of you and your cat or just your cat to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Send it in, and Dan Jaffe will be here the end of the month. He'll pick a lucky winner, as you just said, to win what you just said, an entire year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, exactly like you just said it.
Yeah, but you said it better and with a higher voice.
Just a little.
We posted something on our Facebook page, right? On our Facebook page plus a WGN Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Lisa and I did a little homage to All in the Family, one of the greatest television shows of all time. And here's a little trivia. Maybe Roger might know this. Okay. You know, Roger, All in the Family was a British television show.
Correct.
Did very, very well. And then here in CBS said, let's create an American version.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired Norman Lear.
Yeah,
and
right.
He was the force behind All in the Family. It wasn't called All in the Family in Britain. It was called something else. Do you know who the first person is that they approached to star as Archie Bunker? Yeah, big movie star. In fact, one of the top box office stars of the golden age of Hollywood. And then he turned it down, and then they hired Carol O'Connor, which was really, this was so off base for him, you know, 180 degrees from what Carol O'Connor was all about. He was very PC.
I have no idea. I could throw names out, but
give you a hint. I sat next to him on an airplane for a flight from L.A. to Chicago once, or Chicago to L.A., I can't remember.
And I remember you saying
that. Yeah, we try not to listen to the stories, right?
And he didn't, I tried to talk to him, and he wasn't really interested in talking to me.
Well, that's everyone.